So let's sit for 15, 20 minutes or so, and then we'll share what our thoughts are for this evening. And how might it be to really give yourself to this 15, 20 minutes? Really offer yourself. Wholeheartedly. The steadying of the heart, the brightening, of the energy body awareness, the cultivation of the Brahmavihara. Skillfully meeting difficulty, or working with an image, knowing which path you will take right now. Tonight we thought we would, between us, respond to a couple of questions that have come in. And I think there's maybe five or six sort of mini talks in this, or pieces of reflection, I think. We're hoping to not be really, really long with that. And that there'll be time for some more silence, and also some time for you to be together in the hall with some other kinds of practices tonight that will support where we are. And you'll have the choice about how you enter them. Okay. Okay. So one thing I wanted to offer is, have we used the word imaginal yet? Can't remember. So sometimes, and if you've listened to a lot of Rob's talks, you'll hear the word imaginal perceptions or imaginal images. And that's used in a number of different conceptual frameworks, not just this one. Means different things according to how you define and your ways of looking. But all I want to say here is that when we're working with an image and we're learning how to work with an image, you don't have to worry about, is it the real soul-making thing or is it not the real soul-making thing? Right? It's not have to be a binary like that. What we could say is that there's a spectrum of something, an image becoming more and more and more imaginal, the more of the elements of the lattice that become alive and inform the way of looking. So I would expect for myself, when I was exploring the candle holder, it wasn't an imaginal image, which we might say is one that we're really seeing from the depth of emptiness as neither real nor unreal, that can open in remarkable ways. It wasn't an imaginal image. But there was just enough clues to stay, to allow the elements to switch on, you know, support the eros, see what I found beautiful, allow autonomy, etc. And it becomes more and more imaginal, right? Just in case you've got that kind of mind of like, nah, not that one. You know, it's easy to write, it's easy for some minds to dismiss things very fast. So that's my point for now. Oh, big point, actually. Smallly said. Short point. Big point. we won't read the names, don't worry, of who asked the questions, but can you extend more on the imaginal characters not being real? I feel scared and odd meeting them. We're working on this, but still, it is on the boundary of a bit craziness. Still, there's an atmosphere of sacredness and privacy. So expound a little bit more on them being not real. So I'll just say really briefly, and then I think you've got something to offer on that. Basically, if everything is a little bit like, oof, it all feels a bit too real, in the sense of that I'm getting scared or overwhelmed or oof, I don't want to lose my faculties, you can lean simply to the idea, oh, sweetheart, this is an image. It's coming from the imagination. It's not real. Lean more to the not real, right? Conversely, some people went, well, it's not real. It's made it up, so what? Lean more to what happens if you grant more reality status. So emptiness, and I think you will speak a bit about this, doesn't prescribe the ontology, the reality status of something. So for skill, if it's a little bit crazy making, see it's lean into unreality. Oh, it's just me. I can get up and walk away, right? I don't have to stay here with this. I think that's all I'll say for now, and maybe you can add.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, and thank you for the question.
Yeah.
It's a really good one and a profound one. And maybe just to say that, in a way, one of the intellectual roots or kind of ontological, philosophical roots for the soul-making practice and how Rob first started to sort of create and discover it was the kind of profound emptiness practices and how he'd explored those grounds. And that they, in a way, legitimize and create a safe philosophical framework for the explorations of soul making practices and imaginal practice.
So maybe I'll just add and I'll pass back to you. So this came.
Yeah, please do.
Yeah, it's like Rob wouldn't have been interested in this stuff at all, but the really deep dive into emptiness kind of brought him out to then the next logical next step was actually the ensouling of the re-enchanting of perception.
Exactly. And with that, I thought I would just read, this is really one of the final paragraphs of Seeing That Freeze, where there's sort of intimations and clues in that direction. It sums up a lot very beautifully in the way that the emptiness practices and that kind of understanding can become a really profound ground for all of the exploration that we're entering into.
And just before you read it, then it might be that if you start practicing on this retreat soul making and you start to get a taste for it and you start to like it or love it or feel it as a direction for you, then it's not uncommon that some people say, oh, I think I want to do a bit more emptiness practice to support my soul making practice, and vice versa actually. But some people go, oh, I want to do a bit more emptiness and learn how to find that ground that's being spoken, the groundless ground that's being spoken about. So over to you and Rob.
Yes, In the end, everything is empty. Heart, appearance, way of looking, these two are void and actually inseparable. With respect to how things appear, though, we can acknowledge the primary significance of ways of looking and their effects on the heart, and also some degree of flexibility in perception. At this level, it is certainly clear that the state of the citta shapes and colours perception, but the truth of the converse is easily recognised as well. Perception shapes and colours the citta. Understanding all this opens a door. In practice, we may, to a degree, shape empty perception in the service of freedom and compassion. When there is insight, we know how and what we see are not simply givens, but are the colourable and malleable, magical material of empty appearances. So what's being offered there can be explored to a huge variety of depths, and all of that exploration will be very supportive, will be a supportive ground for the soul making practices and the understanding. It will enable us to work safely with images, and it's one kind of response to the question that was being posed of, like, what do I do when fear arises? And the more fully that we can lean into that knowledge, okay, this is also an empty perception. That will drain the fear out of the image and out of the perception. And also really to second what Catherine was saying earlier, that it can be a very intuitive move. So we don't necessarily need the emptiness practices for that, but that will in a way be a very convincing ground for us to see the unreality or the middle way of images and the middle way of experience.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm also reminded of the other quote that I read a couple of days ago from Surawadi, of how important the philosophical and conceptual frameworks are for imaginal or soul making practice. That sort of ties into this conversation.
Right. Yeah. Right. So the emptiness understanding tied to, but also discriminated from, the conceptual frameworks that also give support. They give like ground. It's like, this is the womb that this image is arising in. It says support. It's robust. It's flexible. And that gives support as well. Good. I feel like my habitual ways of looking are preventing a carefree dive into all of this. As though I need to be a bit more awakened or have a more intuitive feeling for sacredness, perhaps, before this ignites for me. So it's a query. How to marry this with my desire to understand experience? Thank you for the question again. So the dilemma, I feel obstructed from a carefree dive because of my habitual ways of looking, which might be really good habitual ways of looking, right? They might be good practice habits of ways of looking, for example, that help unbind suffering. Or they might be habitual ways of looking at the world that see it as flat. I don't know from this question, but I'm guessing maybe both. Do I need a more intuitive sense for sacredness before I can go further into this? And how does this marry with my desire to understand experience? So I think we've both got something we can respond to. And I'll just say, there's a lot I want to say about this, actually. Firstly, I want to refer to the desire for experience, the desire to understand. Right? Wonderful. And I give a very simple formulation that I found really helpful when Rob first said it. He said, there can be eros going in two directions. He said, eros, so loving desire for the unfabricated, for the complete unbinding, the knowledge of how it works to unbind self, other, and world to the unfabricated. There can be eros for that. The Buddha had eros for that. Like, that was a passionate man that sat under the tree there, loving desire, like, there's more here. Right? You know, when we talk, I mean, you don't hear that, said that in that voice, but maybe we could do a different play. You know, there's more here. I want to understand, right? So there's his desire for understanding experience. And the dual direction of eros can also be for the fabricated, for engaging, participating with the inevitability of the fabrication of perception, which will happen, it's happening, we're doing it all the time. How to engage that with mindfulness, with the ways of looking of the latter. There can be eros for that. So, in knowing ourselves, you might go, oh yeah, I've got both. Or, no, I've got definitely got my unfabricated goes that way. Which way does yours go? when I draw the spectrum, I'll be like, but anyway, however you imagine it. I've definitely got eros, this loving desire for the unfabricated. Like, take me to that complete goneness. Like when we chant Gate Gate, it's like, I'm going, right? Take me, I want to go there, right? Well, I mean, it sounds like a very erotic relationship with the unfabricated, right? But that can be supported by the understanding. I think that's part of what Rob is very, very brilliant at in seeing that freeze is you can actually understand that conceptually and apply those concepts through your ways of looking in your Dharma practice, right? To really understand the sort of building blocks of how the world comes to be and how the world comes apart. So it's possible that the person writing the note has a lot of desire to understand experience because the desire is for the complete cessation of suffering. Right? So I would ask that person, what do you want? If you got that understanding, what would that give you? What would you want from that understanding? Oh yeah, I want peace. Or, no, I want understanding for its own sake, the beauty of it, the marvel of the human love of understanding. Okay. Okay, maybe there's a little bit more, and there's also eros for the fabricated. So that's just another big idea, actually, but briefly put, to help see and to support the desire. You know, it may be that someone does a soul-making retreat and goes, oh, it's really confirmed my desire for the unfabricated. Thank you, that was super interesting. And off I go, right? Yeah, and that would be really valid. And many of you will have both, and they can work together. Did you want to respond at all to that
question? I could respond a little bit. We talked about it earlier, and I sort of ended up reflecting a little bit on my own path of practice with the soul making practices. And I was saying to Catherine, because one of the questions or one of the things that stood out to me in this note was the use of the word sacredness as one of the things that is attractive, that's pulling, that's calling, and having a sense of,
well, there isn't.
Yes,
I mean, like the word that, the word is a big word there. Like
exactly, it's charged.
It's charged word. Like maybe I need more intuitive understanding of sacredness before I could take off.
Yeah, and so I was, I think, reflecting out loud to you and sort of realizing or remembering how for me it was a very gradual path in working with images, and it was really Rob had sort of started to work with them. I was living at Gaia House and offering service there, and sort of receiving little bits of teaching gradually. And I remember working with images and really feeling like, oh, the sacredness thing, it was very interesting to me, but it wasn't kind of like, it wasn't happening experientially through those practices. So certainly the practices were really engaging. I was quite committed, but there was other nodes, other parts of the lattice that were really opened up a whole lot more easily for me. Right. So sort of different senses of beauty, for example. And I think that was also, it was kind of like really a slow opening over years of really doing practice off retreat and on retreat, and sort of discovering like, okay, this makes sense. And I think there was a few things, and meaningfulness and soulfulness, some sense of depth that would, again, it took a while for that to open up, but it made such an impression. It's like, wow, this really makes a difference for me. Or there's something really unusual and beautiful and touching and calling in these experiences, and something that touches a part of the soul or of the self that other practices hadn't done in that same way. But sacredness really came, for me, it came sort of further down the line in how it opened.
And it wasn't such an obvious way in.
Yeah, and it really felt like sacredness, blessedness, the kind of more, that kind of religious language, it felt like I was really interested in it, and it took a while. And I was so grateful to have stuck with it. It was really sort of like this kind of puzzling and trying to figure out how do I practice? How does it work? So that's just to kind of validate some of that. I think the teaching on the nodes of the lattice that was presented over the past couple of days, even that took a while for it to sort of come about, for Rob to sort of, and Rob and yourself to present it together. So I feel like that's a really clear sort of concise teaching that gives a lot of tools on how to practice, that can be very helpful, and just choosing the ones that feel intuitively attractive, that resonate, and sort of going where it feels easy in a way. I think that was helpful for me, and then each of the nodes can sort of begin to open up others. That's been my experience.
Thank you. Anyway.
Did
you have more there? Is that
no? Something? I think that's
thank
good.
You. Yeah. So even though sacredness is in the retreat description, and that's something that I've leaned into this retreat conceptually, like I said, when I said to Rob, "What are we doing? We're restoring, opening, expanding senses of sacredness." then clearly it looks like it has a really, really big place at the table, that word. But another way you could relate to it is if that word and the concept and the possibilities are elusive or evasive, to just put a placeholder at your table for sacredness is, in a way, just like, okay, I don't know, I don't have a kind of intuitive sense of you yet, but thanks, you're here. And as just affirming what Yuha said, look at the lattice. Ah, but that one I do get. Switch that one on first. That one, the less fabricating one, the energy body one. Ah, got that. Okay. There you got two knobs you can twiddle on, yeah. Right? Ah, okay. Oh, good. What's the effect? Right. So, like that. And you can also replace the word sacredness. Sometimes people find it helpful to use the word, refer to the word beauty. Beauty that isn't circumscribed by conventional, or is not limited by conventional senses of beauty. If I may, I'm going to park beauty there for a second. Say more, a little bit more about that later. Can I take your question in a moment? So one of the things we wanted to do tonight was to affirm whatever your sensibility is, or are, you may have many, that are your kind of portals or directions into something. And because, unless you've heard lots of Rob or Yehel or me or other voices that speak to you in that now, you are beginning to take that seat as well. But it's important to hear multiple voices because we're all different as to what will be light up and be our way in. So one of the ways I want to tell this is when we teach the Foundations course of Soul Making Dharma every autumn online, we have 10 modules. And the first 6 are the preparation to module 7, which is when we begin to work with images. And the first year that I taught it, in 2019, I had some of the Sangha holding little groups of the who were already a little bit experienced in soul making, holding the groups of people learning. Oh, you were doing it, Anna-Marie. Am I missing anyone else? Thank you. That one of the things they reported, and I found this really interesting and has been confirmed, is that they were like had a little group of 5 people who hadn't done it before. And after like, in fact, that year we didn't have working with images, but let's say the first 6 modules. First one's about body. Second one's about imagination. Third one's about emptiness. Fourth one's about relationship and two-ness. Fifth one's about desire. Sixth one's about ideas. And some of them reported to me, it's like, oh, it was so interesting seeing people learn the foundations. Some of them switched on once we got to the module on ideas, right? Some people switched on when we, like, switched on, got excited, the eros got roused when we got to the module about emptiness. Other people were like, I don't need that bit. Other people, when they got to the part about eros or imagination. So we're all different, and I want us, we want tonight to, for you to recognize your own fantasy, your own story, your own fantasy for soul, which is going to be made up of your sensibilities and what you love and what is beautiful to you. What is beautiful to you? And And I think, even though we've spoken about Logos a fair bit, I think I want to put a word in for anyone here who sees themselves a little bit more as an ideas person, right, in any way. That realm can be so breathtakingly beautiful. It doesn't mean you're all in your head. I mean, you might be, but it doesn't mean that. There's such beauty. If that's what your beauty and devotion goes to, let that be a validated soul-making portal. It obviously was for Ra and many. One of the things that we offer on the Foundations course is stories where people, we have 8 stories, but there could be many, many more, of what is some of your sensibilities and your ways in, right? So that you can have your own recognition. Because if you only ever heard Rob teaching soul making, it would be interesting to many of you, but it wouldn't necessarily reflect everything that wanted to be reflected and resonate for you to have your particular address for soul. So I'm not going to tell all of the 8 stories. I might put them out on the dining room maybe tomorrow if you're interested. But I'll tell you the themes of them. And you see if you recognize yourself. What ignites your eros, your loving desire? So there's a story about the people who see themselves as artists, musicians, poets, that kind of aesthetic sensibility, who know beauty, and I'll get more to beauty, is way more than some binary of pleasant and unpleasant, that there's something that has a power that calls forth souls into new vistas. Yeah. Yeah. I see that. There's a story about magic. Those who either remember or still know that when they look at the tree, they see it, see them back. Maybe they forgot that as a child, but maybe they didn't. But when the trees had characters, or maybe they still do. And that something in that doesn't feel just like a juvenile thing. It feels like you sense the power and the beauty. And somehow all of these wrapped up with our care for the world. There's something about beauty. James Hillman says we need an aesthetic revolution. An aesthetic revolution that has the power to call forth souls beyond limited vistas and ways of looking. And beauty has the potency to do that. Not a limited idea of beauty, but beauty in all their absolute. That make you tremble and fall to your knees and say, I will serve you. I love you. Said we need an aesthetic revolution because we are in an age that has found really sophisticated ways to numb ourselves as aesthetic and anesthetic. He said we have very sophisticated ways to anesthetize ourselves now. And he said, of course we do, because this is his language, because it's hell to experience suffering. No, it's not hell to experience suffering. It's hell to experience suffering in a cosmos that doesn't have beauty threaded all the way through it. Including making meaning with the suffering. Yeah. We need an aesthetic revolution. And what is it that you find beautiful and learning to be struck by beauty? Again, it for most of us, certainly for me, that word beauty got really small. the images of beauty that were sold. I was sold. I was so small. Poor. Poverty. It was a poverty. Flatness. Like barren soil, in a way. The images of beauty. But if there's something in the soul that yearns for the restoration, Rob could have said the restoration, opening and expansion of senses of beauty. That is not divorced from suffering, that is not a creation of heaven and hell, that is not devoid of actually being able to turn thoroughly, fully towards the horror that we see, but somehow, through the grace, actually weaves a fantasy of being here as a human at this time in ways that allow us to take our place with dignity and deep roots. There's a story about the person, it says, a story about somebody who loves concepts. Yes, I can.
So difficult to hear.
Yes, thank you, Annette. Do you love concepts? This is the story about the one who loves concepts. Because there's such beauty, as I named that before. And I'm slow, like, you didn't say slow. He was slow.
Yeah.
It was slower to come towards sacredness. For me, it was slower to understand the aesthetic glory of concepts and conceptual frameworks. Yeah? But if you know that, there's a story about that, no story is definitive about you. They're reflections for you to find your own and have your own and give it language and colour. There's a story about someone, in a way, Rob's way in, who had dived so deep into emptiness that this was somehow the logical next step to serve the mystery in that way. There's a story about the activist who somehow, you can read them, I don't want to say them all now. There's a story about the religious sensibility. You have a religious sensibility. And there's something really beautiful about that, that you need it to be kind of related to in certain kinds of ways, yeah? What are the other stories, anyone who remembers them?
The lover of emptiness.
The lover of emptiness. Did I say that already? No. The lover of emptiness, like Rob in a way. I mean, he has a strong aesthetic sense to it, but the lover of emptiness. This is the lover of emptiness.
There was the dukkha person.
Oh, the dukkha. Yeah, so that's the other intuition. Somebody may have a sense of having worked as skillfully with their dukkha, you know, really done some work with that, and recognizes actually there's more to dukkha than just healing in the ways I've seen healing before. There's more to dukkha than unbinding. And there's more to dukkha than getting more space. And there's more to dukkha than just seeing the emptiness of it. And we actually can have eros for seeing suffering in ourselves and actually beyond ourselves. And having eros to see that that too is a portal to more beauty and sacredness. Not a beauty that denies the dukkha at all, but somehow has a not only a place, but a homage at the table. Did I forget any of the story? Oh, sexual eros. I forgot about that. You know, that kind of restoration, like there's different paradigms that will support sexual eros, but there's something about that is not only legitimized or restored, and it has the ethics and the emptiness to support it, but actually can be part of, if we can handle, if you're someone that has that as a obvious fire, that can actually really support the opening of the whole eros, psyche, logos dynamic. It's why it's so tricky, but it's also very potent and learning skill without pushing and pulling can really open for lovers and more. Yeah, it's good.